The Share Pickers Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast and on video, it's Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare, SP Angel. You're right, Vadim.
How are you, Justin?
Yeah, not too bad. Market's in a bit of a funny place. We've had a rally. We're trying to break up. In fact, let me straight the charts. It was looking good, and then the American markets sold off, and it dragged us down a little bit. But it was heading towards a breakout, and then it didn't.
But I think the whole Iran war thing and everything, yes. that didn't help.
So that level there, a few days back, it literally touched that 7.63 on the AIM All Share, which is a recent high, and if it gets above that, it's very bullish. But like I said, we had American markets selling off, and let's be honest, American markets are going bananas. The S&P 500 has gone bananas. It really is. And I did point out this, a couple of people saying, look at where it's gone. If you just take off, like I keep saying, is it overbought? Well, look at the gap between the S&P 500 and the 200 moving average. If you scroll back and look at any time in the past 10, 20 years, It hasn't been this much of a gap ever. So it's left that and taken off.
Yeah,
it's about 13% above it. So it, of course.
Well, look at it's adjusting now, and Tesla's come down a lot because they're having issues. So no surprise, gravity is kicking in.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the big stocks here. In fact, some of my sons own some American stock, but Nvidia, which has been the big rally. I mean, you can see almost like the S&P. It's now rolling over a little bit. So it's good that the American market's cool. I don't know if they're going to just fall back. They've got a lot of earnings out this quarter. A lot of the companies are good, aren't they? A lot of the big companies are fundamentally good. They're maybe a little bit overvalued.
But they're rolling over. Have a quick look at Tesla. That's one of the one we have there, Nvidia, the Magnificent Seven.
I just look at the market caps of these yesterday. Nvidia, $2 trillion. Amazon, right? It's 1.8 trillion. So it's bigger than Amazon. Yeah. Apple is also 2.6 trillion. But the biggest one, of course, is Microsoft, which powers away 3 trillion. But Tesla, it's been having a bit of a nightmare. It's 400, it's like a small cap now. 495.
It's only half a trillion.
It's only half a trillion. Yeah, yeah. But look at that. So if you scroll back, you can see there it's gone from, $416 is now $155, and
rally. Look at that rally, just the way it broke through the 200 upwards. Right there, exactly. That was the rally that was the Magnificent Seven, like mega rally that's dragged the whole S&P up, right? There's been a few anyway. So, my main point is that now several of them are rolling over, some of them are collapsing. That's it. One debate was, are the small caps going to catch up or are the large caps overvalued? And it looks like it's a bit of both, right?
Yeah.
So the small caps, the Russell 2000 has rallied like 28%, 30%, but that's nothing compared to what the Magnificent Seven have done, comparatively speaking. And then the Magnificent Seven, over rallied. So now they're coming back.
Yeah. And if you're listening or watching this thing, why are you talking about American stocks? Because it's like the moon. It does affect, our tides. It does affect our markets a lot. That's the Russell 2000, by the way. It, like I said, from May 2022, it's come down. It hit this sort of 1,635, and it's in the range then, between 1,635 and 2,000. And it sort of broke above that, but now it's back in that range. It broke above that, back in December, dipped down. Then it broke back above that in February, and it went to 2,100 pretty much, and now it's back at 1,947. So it's back in that range. I think they're finally catching on that interest rates in America are going to be higher for longer. And in fact, that brings us around to, over here, essentially, we had inflation data out. And it's funny that, they're predicting, I think, 3.1%, the overall figure.
Yeah.
And it went to 3.2, which is still less than last month. But the issue is, and I was just listening to a guy who's written a book, he's from the ex-Bank of England guy, talking about it's very complex to bring all inflation into one number, there's so many different parts of the economies, so many different goods and services. He said, if you look at goods, that's coming down. But services are not, services inflation, because the cost of living wage, or the national living wage has gone up. Yeah. And so everyone has to put their money up, their wages up for that. Yeah. And so that's running at just over 6%, services. And within that is rent inflation. Yeah. And that's about 9%. And you have to understand, people put their rents up because they've got mortgages. The mortgages have gone up because the government have reduced, increased interest rates. I'm thinking, governments are playing into the inflation here. It doesn't help at all. Because, logical renting.
Couple of things. One, I just want to, just before we move on to inflation, see this chart on the, this is the Russell, right? Russell 2000. Yeah. Look at the peaks. So we haven't returned to anywhere near the previous highs, whereas the Magnificent Seven have exceeded.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? So the small caps market in the US by no means has caught up. It's still way below what the big tech companies have done in terms of rally. Now, they are slowing now, and maybe they've overshot and they're coming back down. But the Russell 2000 genuinely hasn't returned to those highs of 2350, 2400. Do you see what I mean? So that rally hasn't caught up at all yet.
Okay? Yeah, look at Apple. $200 pretty much down to 168. The one that hasn't is slowing. Well, it is rolling over a bit. Microsoft, Nvidia is a little bit, and that's the question is here. That's the trouble. You know, will they roll over, and will that? You know, will we have contagion here, or will people just go to a smaller caps or go to different markets? Because I mean, the UK, we're not overvalued. You know, we haven't got a hot economy. Like I said, there's probably a chance we may reduce interest rates before the US. And so, will we see money inflow from this, from the outflow from the Mag 7 pretty much? Because, or will everyone just become, risk averse and just sell everything pretty much?
It feels like this is the tragedy kind of that we suffer every time in the UK is the US stocks go up, ours don't follow. But then they come back down, ours follow down.
So we may as well just buy US stocks.
Well, unfortunately, that's part of the problem. Yeah.
But you know what? They're saying that, regardless of the economy, we're looking at indices pretty much and a couple of individual companies. But like I said, it's a market of stocks. And there's always opportunity out there to buy good companies, I believe. And like I said, I've spent 2 years focusing on that. In fact, I've written a book about it because the book isn't even finished, but it's about how I've had to adjust my strategy over the last 2 years because I've gone gangbusters, from 2009 to 2021, and 2022 knocked me massively. And I thought, oh, hang on a sec, you've got to adjust. And when you realize you're going to do a higher interest rate environment, and I've never really had that. I mean, I've gone through four bear markets, been all four, and I've never really had a time where interest rates have been going up like this. And of course, pre-interest rates, when interest rates were low, it was like pre-revenue stocks were the place to be because raising money was easy. And it was all about future potential. Now that's not the case. And it won't be the case for a while, I think, because, interest rates are not coming down fast. It's going to be slow. So I think,
On inflation, it is actually the natural, it wasn't runaway inflation, but we had a significant bout of inflation. And what we saw was exactly how inflation takes hold, right? So inflation starts in supply chain issues. So, input prices start going up, which is like commodity prices. Then we had the war and gas price issues. So these are all commodity type inputs, okay? And then what you have is then all of a sudden inflation expectations start growing and salaries start going up. The problem with salaries, comparatively speaking, is they're not as they're sticky. They're genuinely sticky. Think about it. Someone gets a raise, a 20% raise over 2 years. Is their salary ever going back down?
No.
And then they start getting an expectation that salaries should keep going up. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the point, is that now we're seeing the tail end of that inflation cycle. But it's the stickiest. So that's where we're having a problem of getting it all the way down, back down to 0 to 2%. And it seems to be sticky at around 3 to 3.5.
Well, that's it. Same with rents. Rents never come down.
Yeah.
Rents and salaries never come down. So it's food can, in fact, it can go up and come down a bit. But in fact, food is not back to where it was previously, but it's come down from the peak. But salaries and rents don't,
Exactly. But remember, it's not the actual fixed amount, right? It's inflation. It's not, it's not comparative. Meaning my point being is salaries keep going up because there's an expectation that salaries have to keep going up. Do you see what I mean? If they flatten, then that'll work. That'll stop the inflation, right? As in, remember, it's not disinflation we're talking about, right? It's not deflation we're talking about.
It's a slowing of inflation.
It's a slowing of inflation. Exactly. So
the thing is with that as well is when you get for example, an employer that has a medium-sized employer has 1,000 employees, and they all have to put their wages up by 10% or whatever, If they can't afford that, they end up laying people off. And so that negatively affects the economy, you know. So it will slow the economy essentially, because they can't not award people a living wage because it's part of the regulation. But
Correct. Yeah, and then the government, you know, things like salary adjustments are based on CPI. There's a lag, you know what I mean, on wage inflation. And the expectations is the problem, is the thing we're trying to change. I think we have changed it. I just think it has to seep through the system. Wages started moving after the inputs started moving, right? Just exactly as you'd expect. The input prices moved first and then wages followed. And now, just as we're exiting, input prices move down first, or because input prices actually do deflate, right? So, the cost of oil and gas has dropped, right? Mm. That is filtering through, and now wages are slowing. And that's the hope, is that it slows a bit more. And that's why we're stuck in this high rate environment for a bit longer, but it's punishing for stocks.
There's three years of punishment. Yeah, exactly. There's one thing that Andrew Bailey did say yesterday. He said he expects inflation to come down again next month because of the energy cap. The energy prices have dropped massively. But with that, you've got a national living wage being piled on. So it's a mix of two. So energy is going to drop out a lot lower, which will help the prices. But then you've got that, the wage. But like I said, there's always opportunities out there. I mean, genuinely, I literally have to change my strategy a lot recently in the last couple of years. But like I said, 2022 was a nightmare year. I lost money. 2023 didn't, and now 2024 it's hard going to find these stocks, but you have to be better. You learn, you don't learn anything from a bull market too much. You can't learn, but you really have to learn to get good in a bear market, otherwise you just lose money full stop. And in fact, worth mentioning actually, last time you mentioned Plarium, which is one of the stocks I held in the bull market,
and then did
very well for me. Easy to raise money, excellent technology, and of course now they hit almost. It was a perfect storm because they were in the middle of. And I think people like investors understand this, because when it's easy to raise money, these are the stocks to be in. When it's not, they're pretty much not. and so like I said, I was in there from 70. I think my average was about, 30 pence, I think. So I was doing quite well. And then, of course, they had that knockback from the FDA. Then what happens, of course, when you've got a loss-making company not generating any revenue, the two most important things is how much cash they got, how long will it last. You realize, uh-oh. So not only you got the bad news coming in, which was that big dip in the share price, there's also worry about financing. And that then becomes front and center of the story. The actual story, the potential, doesn't. People start worrying about the finances, start selling. And so look at that. It's gone from £1.10, this stock, down to 3.8 pence. And the last time we mentioned this, I had some trolls on X having a go, saying, oh, you're on playing. I thought, what are you talking about? I mean, do you know what I understand? This is a message to the trolls. Shouldn't really feed them anything, but because they just get worse then. But When you're an investor, being an investor, like anyone, it doesn't matter if you're good or bad. If you're very good, it's like being a musician. You don't have hit songs after hit songs. Every now and again, you'll have a dud, right? But hopefully, the hit songs you make will help you, and you'll make some money off them. But sometimes you can get it wrong. And this, I don't know what the percentage was, but it's like a 90% chance, wasn't it, FDA approval? Didn't happen. And so it went down, and so no one was expecting this. My issue was I probably had too much money into it. So it dipped down, it bounced back up, and then I sold on the bounce. So I couldn't sell anyway on the down there. So I got out. And now I've still got people having a go at me on Plarium because they're in because I think I was in. They're, well, hang on a second. Why did you get in? What was the reason you got in? Just because I got in? So why didn't you get out when I got out? And so if you can just jump on other people's investments because you don't have your own ideas, you can't just blame other people. I didn't have the password to your stock market account. I didn't buy that for you. You bought it. It was your decision. Take ownership of that, and you will become a better investor. If you accept the losses as your losses and it's your fault, you learn from it. If you don't accept it, then you won't learn from it because you don't see it as your fault. But literally, you can't blame other people for your investment ideas at all. For your investment losses. It's down to you. And that's to help you. You will get better. And, when I started out, I was losing money all the time. I should jump on other people's tips. But I can't remember blaming anyone because I realized it was me doing I was putting the money on. It's my fault. So it's just, it's part of the deal. You have to accept, when you invest money, it's your money. It's your decision. Full stop. And you can't just take other people's advice and just go with it. And that's it. It doesn't work like that.
Another thing I think that is important, and I think, you know, I don't claim to do it very well myself, but when you have, when you're making an investment, you have to think about your exit strategy as well. You have to have a consideration of what, you know, what are you in this for? Are you, is it a horizon? Is it a time horizon? Is it a performance metric? Are you prepared to follow the story only and see how it goes? You know, it's different strategies, right? So for example, you know, the Warren, anything from a day trader to the Warren Buffett strategy, every strategy is valid. It's just having one, you know what I mean? Yeah. Having some concept of why am I in this stock for, you know, obviously to make money, but over what period, to what end, how long, what am I looking for? A milestone in the business. You know, there's a reason I'm buying this stock, which is to exit it at a gain, right? Part of the reason of the thinking, and I find this is just lost in investment. I'm not as good at exiting as I wish I were. But it's, you know, setting yourself with some basic parameters of your exit strategy, because if you're going into something, you have to be thinking about when am I getting out of this?
Yeah. Well, you know, do you know what? It's one of the things I posted on, in fact, one of the best sort of interactions I've had for a long time. But I said, where most private investors, why most private investors lose money is they don't think about the risk. They only think about the reward. And they go into a stock thinking, how much money can I make in this company? And they think, oh, if I can make, say, if I put £1,000 in and it's going to be a 10 bagger, you know, I'll make £1,000. So I'll put 10 grand in and that'll be the entire portfolio. No. First and foremost, there is no reward at the start. It's just risk. You're risking your capital. So think in terms of, how much can I lose here if it goes completely wrong? Because that's worst case scenario. And if you can protect yourself against that, then you're okay. If your portfolio doesn't take a massive hit, if it all goes wrong, because it can, especially if you're investing in very high risk stocks. So thinking in terms of risk first. Once you start getting the profit on that, then you have to think, okay, how can I manage that? But first and foremost, it's about risk management. And then when you get into profit, it's about risk and reward management. But first and foremost, focus on the risk, not the reward. That's the problem. You know, people just see the upside, not the downside. So when the downside happens, and inevitably, you know, it will happen in one or two stocks you have, you haven't got a plan for it because you haven't planned for it. You just plan for the reward. You haven't planned for the risk. So plan for the risk first, because first of all, you are risking your capital and you haven't got any reward there yet. Yeah. So the reward is in your brain. You think you will get a reward. It's fantasy at the moment. So, you know, think about risk first. Anyway, sorry, bit of news on Plarium, which is, I suppose, good news. So a US patent granted for dynamic cardiopulmonary blood flow imaging with xenon MRI. What's this about?
So remember, they got an approval, right, for their technology, and it was a first approval, and it's a very important one. It's the broadest one, kind of the ones they're going to be seeking, you know, throughout they have other plans for this technology, is my point. This is one of their other plans for the technology. So the first one that they received, so this is the FDA approval for basically they want to check how your lungs ventilate, okay?
Yeah.
But remember, this is a contrast agent. So the xenon is inhaled and it lights up on the MR, okay, scan, showing you that the gas goes where it goes in the lung, okay? And that's what ventilation, okay? So the first approval was with what's known for ventilation defect, which means that lungs are obstructed. Lungs get, you know, affected by, say, a tumor. Lungs get affected by a disease. So all of a sudden, there's parts of the lung that don't ventilate properly. And that's a major cause of concern. And that's what you're trying to diagnose through ventilation defects. So you're trying to see where in the lung air isn't getting to, right? That's a very mechanical one, okay? Another one they're seeking down the line is gas exchange, okay? So they're going to need an approval. They're going to need to do work on that in terms of clinical trials, et cetera. But that's a future use of this technology as well, which is watching the air go into the lungs, okay? And this is all the same contrast agent. It's always xenon. And then watching it exchange with the blood, okay? So that's how you get oxygen into your system is the gas exchanges with your blood. So CO2 comes out and oxygen comes in from the air in your lung. So that's a second functionality that's quite important in your lung, because you can have areas of your lung that ventilate well, so you get air into them, that's perfectly fine, but it doesn't exchange because there's something wrong with the lining, okay? Yeah. And there's certain, like for example, there's a condition called fibrosis of the lung, which you can't see. It ventilates perfectly well, but it's not there's no gas exchange. So that's a secondary function of this technology, which is very valuable, and they intend to develop it. this is another one. This is they're looking for basically blood flow imaging. Okay, and basically you can actually test as literally as the patent describes dynamic blood flow. And that is a whole other category of potential diagnostic capability of this technology. And the idea is to make it far more less invasive than current measurements that are in place. Right? So it's interesting to show. It's a good patent, and you know it's good for the technology. It has multiple applications, future applications. Obviously, they will take money to develop this, and you know this may not be the best time in the company's shares to be talking about future applications. Like the shares are suffering quite, as you said, steeply because they're a bit tight on cash. But back to just the technology, from a technology standpoint, it's good news. It's good news because it shows that the company is thinking about the future and its future applications over and above the current applications.
Yeah. Do you know what? I fell in love with the story, and it's a dangerous thing to do. Because literally, it's one of the things I talk about in the book there, but looking at the financials rather than stories, don't fall in love with the story because you literally ignore everything else and you shouldn't ignore it. The story is important, of course, in any company, but you know, you've got to keep an eye on the numbers as well, because that tells the true story.
I think that's important. So, you know, is this announcement like game changer? Right now it isn't, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, the fundamental issue with this company, and we've discussed it at length in the past and here today, is there are certain things in a company, especially in a down market, that dwarf anything in the story. And that's, you know, the runway, the cash runway. So that's the story right now in this company. Everyone's concerned about the cash runway. So irrespective of what we talk about the future of the business, you know, no point in talking about what the business can do in 5 years' time if we can't get through the next year, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a pity because, you know, I said, I hope this company does really well because, like I said, the technology seems amazing. It does seem a cutting edge. It'll help a lot of people. But hope is not an investment strategy. You know, it's, you've got to have other things that go along with that. But like I said, I do hope it does very well here. And like I said, if we start getting some commercial orders or something, which we need to see, then maybe I'll get back in. But at the moment, like I said, it's a very difficult market. So many companies. Yeah. I heard a stat. We'll finish on this, but I heard a stat, I think it was on Radio 5 Live, and I can't find the article, but I walk in the dog and I'm listening, and the podcast, so 73 companies have delisted from AIM in the last year, apparently. Yeah. And I think, wow, and that seems a lot. I mean,
it's a 10% drop. There's about 700 companies on AIM, you know, ballpark. So it's about a 10% drop of companies on the market.
But I don't see, though, a comparison stat on previous downturns. Because I assume this is relatively normal-ish. I mean, this is inflation, interest rates induced. So maybe it is harder for companies to raise on AIM, which is what a lot of companies list for. That's the primary reason, to raise money, capital. Yeah. So I would like to see a comparison to previous downturns, see if that's in the ballpark. So I assume it would be the similar kind of story, wouldn't it? Whenever
downturns, for sure, in downturns, there are delistings, definitely. I think kind of AIM had its, you know, heyday in 2007 was the last year of the rally, and at that time there were 1,700 companies on AIM. So you know, AIM's come down a lot over the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
So I think in 1995 it was when it was established. It had 12 companies, right? So it went from 12 in 1995 to 1,700 in 2007. And now it's at about 700. So that's
that chart there, right? That's the weekly chart of AIM. I mean, 1999 it started, but they started indexing it on TradingView in 2002.
Yeah.
That there is an excellent example of why AIM is a stock picker's market. It's not, you know, people say, because even back at May 2006, it was at 1300 pretty much. Yeah. And it recently reached that high. But it's now back down at levels, you know, well, it's been these levels for quite a few times. So it's not gone up. And that's the whole point of AIM. It's a stock picker's market. It's not a sort of index you would buy a tracker on, because there's so much, it's good companies and some really bad ones as well. So in fact, some really good companies, but people just, because there's a lot of bad companies, that takes the attention away from the good companies. But it's a stock picker's market. It's not something to index, but yeah, like I said, it's a market of stocks, and there's some decent businesses in there. As an investor in individual companies, that's your job to do that, and inevitably you will find a bad one, and it'll hit you. It can hit you anyway. Yeah, a good one can hit you. You know, so there we are.
One thing that's clear from this chart is look where we are. We're in one of the deep troughs right now. So, I mean, it could go lower. It's true. I don't think it will. I think we're pretty much at the bottom end. But look at what happens when it goes back. I mean, look at that difference. And in any given stock, you know, you're absolutely correct. This is not an index market. It's all about stock picking. But even on if the index is doing that, some of the winning stocks are doing even more, right?
Yeah,
to push that whole index up.
Yeah. Well, it's down 49%, and that's including the winners.
That's exactly. So imagine what happens if you pick winners now and you have that rally, okay, in the whole index. What do you think the winners are doing?
Yeah.
They're doing that rally.
Better news for you here, right? I looked at my I'll finish on this. I looked at my microcap league, and I got the 10 best highest ranked companies on this league, okay? And since January, 2023, which is, let's go back to that. So from here, pretty much, they've done 65%. The average of 10 of them, one of them's done 400%, some of them's done 100%. But the average is 65% gain when AIM's gone down 10%. And so, you know, it's worth it. And the microcap league is very good. It just ranks companies on fundamentals and momentum. So it works out. Anyway, thanks for that, Vadim. I'm a minute over. Apologize for that. We'll speak to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.